My name is Debbie Adams, and I am the author of Divine Promises, Trusting God's Faithfulness. And please keep listening to Chevo's podcast.
Welcome to the Vivid Vision podcast. Thank you for tuning in and making your choice to win. This is the show we normally motivate and inspire. We give you tactical strategies to implement on your way to greatness. And now, here's your host, Chevo Umeni.
All right, listeners, welcome to Vivid Vision Podcast with Chevo Umeni. And it's going to be an exciting one today because I'm with Fiona Demang. She lives in Melbourne, Australia. Fiona Demang, I would like you to introduce yourself to our listeners and let's get into what we have for them today.
Okay, so I am an inspirational speaker and resilience coach. And the reason why I started doing that is because I actually have grown up being legally blind. And so my own life experiences are something that I have realized that I guess I've got a power in me that helps myself to be positive and resilient, and I help other people to do so.
Okay, Fiona, you know, this is an audio recording. The people don't see us, right?
Yes.
Okay, I would like you to explain what you mean by legally blind. What do you mean?
Okay, so I guess most people, when they think about someone that's blind, they think, oh my gosh, you can't see anything. Blindness is actually a spectrum. So you can sort of, you know, have everything from sort of, I guess, a little bit of loss of vision right through to not seeing anything. And where I sit is probably somewhere sort of down towards the bottom end of the scale. I've probably got about 10% of my vision left. So I can see things in really bright areas, or I can see things that are really sort of big, but I don't see things in definition. So yeah, with about 10% left, it's gotten worse as I've gotten older. So when I was young, I had much better vision, and it's just kind of gotten worse as I got older. But essentially, it's always sort of, you know, not been great. And yeah, I've just sort of worked out how to adapt along the way and work with what I've got now.
Oh, great. I understand better now. Okay, can you share with us some of the biggest challenges you have faced and how you overcame them?
I think one of the biggest things is overcoming the expectations that other people have of what you can and can't do. So for me, there's definitely things that I can't do, like I can't drive a car, for example. But having said that, there's plenty of things that I can do. But quite often when you have a disability, people just assume that you can't do anything and that you always need help. And so essentially I've living a very successful life. I run my own business. I work for the government. I, you know, do lots of recreational activities. There's not much that my disability stops me from doing, but it's really interesting to actually sort of, you know, I guess, teach people that, you know, not all disabilities prevent you from doing all of the things.
Great. And, you know, when people try to help you to help you in your challenges, it is not because they look down on you. It's because they care about you and they want you to be okay. You know that, right?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, quite often, you know, people, you know, really want to help, but maybe they just don't know how to ask, or they think they're helping when sometimes they're sort of, you know, maybe not helping in the best way. So my best recommendation for any of your listeners, that if they see somebody who is blind or vision impaired, and they think, I would like to help this person, or, you know, there's something that I feel that I would like to do, I think the best option is to just go and ask that person and say, hey, would you like some help? and see what they answer. And if they say, yes, I would really like some help, then great, you help them. If they say, no, it's okay, I'm managing quite well by myself, then, you know, you take that as well and say, okay, well, you know, if you need anything, I'm here if you want.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. Okay, what inspired you to become a resilience coach and inspirational speaker?
I think that it came from, I started off when I finished high school, I decided I wanted to be a social worker so I could kind of, you know, help other people. And then I studied lots of natural therapies and sort of alternative therapies. And so the coaching and the speaking was kind of, I guess, a different format to do those helping things and to share my story and to hopefully help other people by sharing some really practical tools and tips and ways of helping people to manage their own situations.
Oh, great. So do you have anything going on? Do you have a foundation or organization, or do you run classes? How do you help people?
Yeah, I do workshops from time to time. I also do lots of one-on-one coaching because I think sometimes having someone that can tailor what you need specifically to what your outcomes are is going to be much better than just kind of shoving everyone in a group, and everyone might have different things that they want to get out of it and different goals. And so sometimes that's not as effective as that one-on-one kind of work. So I do lots of one-on-one work with people, and then of course do the speaking, and then that sort of, you know, one to many. And so there's lots of different variants of how I worked with different people.
Yeah, I believe throughout all these, there would be obstacles. So how do you approach these obstacles and setback?
It's about having really good planning. So, and look, not always does that planning turn out, but at least if you've planned a situation and you think, okay, well, I know how I'm going to get from point A to point B, and either that's something that I can navigate myself, or maybe I need someone to support me to sort of, you know, navigate from sort of, you know, going to a different location. It's about, I guess, making sure that people are aware of my situation. So if I do need help, then I'm kind of not springing it on them at the last moment and saying, hey, by the way, I've got a disability, I need some extra help. It's kind of giving them advance notice. But for me, a lot of it is just having a really good plan and knowing where I'm at with everything. And so to other people on the surface, it looks like everything sort of, you know, I'm just participating in life as everybody else does, but they don't necessarily realize all of the little things that I do that, you know, I've adapted to do differently, or that I've planned in advance to actually make my life easier.
Oh, great. And how do you teach that to people? How do you teach to, help them overcome their own obstacles?
It's about working out what people's goals are and actually having something that they're working towards, because I think sometimes we get so stuck with where we're at the moment and seeing those barriers that are preventing us from doing the things that we want, that we actually don't know what our goals are. So setting a really firm goal and then working out what are the baby little steps that you can take on a regular basis. And that might be a daily basis or a weekly basis, just to get yourself moving in the right direction towards reaching that goal. And it might take you lots and lots and lots of little steps, but every time you do something towards that goal, it's creating momentum and you're closer to that end result. So sometimes it's about making actions and taking those small steps. Sometimes it's about working out, okay, well, why am I not taking those steps at the moment? And actually then working out some better coping mechanisms or better time management or, you know, various other things that you can do to start getting you to move from that spot that you're in at the moment.
All right. You know, let me tell you something about Vivid Vision, this podcast. This podcast is all about sharing our life experiences, our life challenges, our life stories, to impact the people that listen to us. So I would like you to share your story of inspiration and resilience from your own life that you believe will resonate with our listeners. You have any?
I think being adaptable and not being afraid to just take a chance and take every opportunity that's put forward to you. So one of the things that happened with me is I grew up in a little country town that was in, outback Australia. And so it was very isolated. It was before the internet happened. And so we had really, really poor resources. And especially for someone with a disability, it meant that I didn't have the opportunity to learn Braille, for example, or to have a special teacher at school. Like, I went through mainstream schooling. I was basically treated like every other kid. And there were some things that needed to be adjusted. But as a whole, much of my childhood was as every other child of my own age. And sometimes that worked really well and it did teach me to be adaptable and resilient. Sometimes it didn't work so well because sometimes I was trying so hard to be like all of those other people and realized that in some ways my disability stops me from being like that. And in essence, really, you know, we don't necessarily need to be like everybody else, but especially when you're young, that whole comparison thing and fitting in seems really important. And so as I got older, I realized that I could use the skills that I'd realized from being young to then use that to be strong and adapt things in the rest of my life. So as soon as I finished high school, I moved to the city to do university so I could follow a career. I just continually take every opportunity that's in front of me. And I think it's all a possibility for learning. So you can do something and you can make a mistake or learn that it wasn't something that you really want to do again in the future, but at least you gave it a go. And so you don't have regrets about it. And I think really there's nothing worse than having regrets and wondering how something might have turned out had you done something and given it a go. I think sometimes it's better to maybe have a not so great experience, but at least have tried something.
So how do you have that no regret mentality? How do you have the mindset?
It's just giving everything a try. So instead of saying, oh, no, I don't want to do it, or taking the easy way out, we all sort of want this comfortable life where we don't push our boundaries. And that seems nice, but it also means that we don't grow. So I think sometimes, you know, pushing your boundaries and being a bit fearful and doing something that provokes you to, you know, really challenge yourself, I think that actually gives us a really sense of achievement at the end. And, you know, you can be really proud of yourself for the fact that you went out of your comfort zone and you did it, rather than looking back and going, oh, I wonder what would have happened had I taken that other choice or taken that opportunity. I think, you know, it's about taking everything that comes your way, embracing it, even if it is a little bit scary, because you never know how it's going to turn out. And it might not turn out so great, but it also might turn out fantastic. And if you don't try it, you'll never know.
That is very true. That is very true. And if you try it and you failed, and you fail, you're going to learn from it. But if you do not try it, you're going to live with the regret.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's right. So can you share with us how you have learned to adapt and navigate the world as a legally blind individual, and how has the experience shaped your perspective on life and resilience?
I guess we all have opportunities in life where we can, take the easy way or the hard way. And so here in Australia, the easy way is to, I guess, you know, have funding from the government so you can stay at home on a disability payment and, you know, not have to go and face the wide world. I chose not to do that because I thought, no, I want to get out there. I want to do things. I want to learn. I want to experience. And so for me, every day is a challenge. Like, you know, I wake up, I have to think, okay, what am I going to wear today? Like, I've got a special way of sorting out my wardrobe so I know what color shirt is what, or, you know, all of those things. You know, if I'm going into the office, it means that I've got to navigate my work office is maybe 1 hour if I get driven, or maybe 1 hour and a half if I have to catch a bus and two trains. So it is a bit of adventure to get to work. So I must admit, the possibility of working from home during COVID and then since has been really great, but I do need to go to the office sometimes. And so, you know, it's just hoping that the bus driver stops for me on the side of the road rather than drives past, because, you know, I can't tell that the bus is coming until it's right kind of near me. So like everybody else would be waving at the bus to stop it, I just have to hope that the bus driver stops. So, you know, all of those little things are, you know, little mini adventures. And so, you know, I can go out and I can do things independently, or I can do things with somebody else as a support person. And either way, there's some level of, you know, just navigating in a different way. I mean, you imagine navigating even just around your house, which is a familiar place, with your eyes closed, and how difficult it would be to do the things that you do. Going out into the big wide world where, you know, there may be construction work, or, you know, they change the platform at the train station where you have to catch your train from to somewhere that's unfamiliar, all of those things can really impact.
Okay, Fiona, I want to ask, while growing up, did you have some sort of discrimination? How did you deal with it? Did it affect your self-esteem? How did you deal with people?
Yeah, look, I think I really didn't have very good self-esteem, nor the ability to advocate for myself when I was young. And so there was lots of, you know, mean kids at school that used to bully, because of course they will pick on the person that's easiest to sort of, you know, cause a problem for. So there was lots of bullying and teasing at school. You know, sometimes our school system wasn't designed very well to cater for the needs that I had. So, you know, I grew up in the time where we used to read off of overhead projectors a lot for our schoolwork. So the teacher would come in, they'd put the notes on the overhead projector, and you would be sort of, you know, tasked to write down your class notes from that. And of course, I couldn't read what was put on the overhead projector. Now, if the teacher was actually thinking forward, they would make a photocopy of that slide before they put it on the projector, and therefore I could see the notes and I could have written them down. But quite often they didn't think like that. And so I would kind of just be sitting there twiddling my fingers for, you know, 40 minutes while all the rest of the class was writing down the notes. And then maybe if I was lucky, the teacher would give me the notes at the end of the session. So, you know, there was, I don't think that was particularly, you know, on purpose discrimination there. But it definitely had an impact, because it meant that I was always having to chase people to, you know, get my schoolwork done. And, you know, another example of that would be that the school curriculum sort of had a set system of what sports you needed to play for physical education. And so, again, there was no flexibility in terms of if I couldn't play cricket or basketball. You know, I was quite often sat with the children that were, you know, writing lines or something. They were kind of, in essence, being punished because they didn't bring their PE uniform or whatever. So, again, like, the system just wasn't really designed for somebody that had different needs, and I was not in a position to be able to stand up for myself and advocate to say, well, hey, hang on, this is not right. Like, you need to give me better support.
So what coping strategies or tools do you use to navigate the physical environment as a visually impaired person? How do you navigate your environment? What tools do you use?
So I don't have a guide dog. I actually use like one of the long white canes. So when I'm out navigating in public and going from point A to point B, so from a mobility perspective, I use the white cane. From the perspective of doing daily activities, technology has been a fantastic thing in the sense that it has enabled me to, you know, do things that lots of other people do just by sort of, you know, setting up different features. So for example, I have an iPhone. The iPhone actually has an accessibility section, and you can actually turn on what's called voiceover, which basically then means it reads everything out to you on the screen. And so I have the same iPhone as everybody else. Mine just behaves a little bit differently. You know, I've got little barcode readers, so I can stick a sticker onto things and then record what that might be. So if I've got, you know, my canisters in the cupboard, for example, with my flour and sugar and things in them, they've all got little labels, and then I can just wave this little barcode reader at the front of the canisters, and it will tell me what's in them without me having to open them and see which is in each canister. So there's all sorts of little bits of technology that are really, really helpful. I think the thing that I use mostly would be my phone. And within that, you know, audiobook readers. And so I've always been an avid reader. And when I was young, I could still sort of see it well enough to read a print copy of a book. But by the time I got to about 16, that was no longer the case. And so I've learned to adapt to audiobooks. And that's definitely something that I really utilize all of the time.
Wow, that's great. So, you know, I talked about discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some misconceptions and stereotypes about blindness. How do you address them? I believe you've encountered some. How do you address them?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, about educating people and, you know, dispelling those myths or those misconceptions. And look, I'm really open to people asking me questions, and I'm quite happy sharing on social media, for example, you know, those little things that make my life different.
You know, sorry to cut you short. Before you continue, please, can you tell us these misconceptions that you have heard from people?
A lot of people assume that you can't work, which is totally incorrect, because I've pretty much had a consistent job ever since I finished university. So that would be one of the misconceptions in terms of, you know, assuming people with disabilities aren't going to be great in the workforce, which in actual fact, the statistics have proven that someone with a disability is actually probably better in your workforce than someone that may not have one. So, you know, that's one of the misconceptions. I think, you know, what else? I think people have this assumption that, especially with blindness, that you need to have a guide dog or you need to be using the white cane. And that isn't always the case. So there's some people that have low vision. And for me, I was probably 30 before I really started using the white cane all of the time. And the only thing that really made me swap over and use that more regularly is, it was the time that I had my children. And so that was then meaning that I had other people that I was responsible for looking after, not just myself. And so that's the reason why I started to use it. But not everybody that has low vision always uses the white cane. Another misconception just came to me in the sense that a lot of people think that you can't have kids. And, oh my gosh, how did you have children? And... you know, you can't look after them, you're blind. So again, I just adapted things differently. And so my daughters are now, you know, young adults, But essentially, you know, they've had a different life in some ways, because we did have to do things slightly differently, but it's also taught them different skills. So for example, you know, maybe we had to catch public transport to go to, you know, the gymnastics class or the dance class, but then that has taught my daughters to actually be very independent and now be able to travel from place to place by themselves and, you know, be quite confident. So all of the misconceptions that happen, you know, until you get to know somebody and you learn about them, I think it's very easy to judge somebody else's life. And that goes for all of us. And you know, putting our own picture of what we think someone's life must be like onto that other person without actually finding out anything about them. And so I think there's always that space to ask the questions and learn about somebody else's life and then have that empathy or that understanding about what it may be like for them.
Yeah, Fiona, talking about misconceptions and stereotypes, do you know that I feel some way about people who were born blind, like they've never seen light in their life? I kind of wonder how they live. I'm wondering, how do they cope? They were born blind, they've never seen light.
And for me, I was very lucky in the sense that I always did have some level of vision. So even though it wasn't great when I was little, I was able to learn to read and write, for example. So now even, like, I journal quite regularly. And so, like, physically write down and journal in a book with a pen and paper. However, I mean, I can't read what I'm writing, but because when I was young, I learned how to read and write, like, I've got that skill. And so I can write in my daughter's birthday cards or whatever. So I think, you know, sometimes those skills have developed because I had the vision, and even though now I've lost it, you know, it was something that I could build upon. The same thing as I've obviously seen lots of things. So I know what a tree looks like and you know, what color the sky can be and all of those things that are, you know, probably very difficult to explain. But having said that, you know, I can't really answer your question because, in essence, I really don't know what it would be like. And I imagine it would be very difficult to visualize things when you don't know what they were to start off with.
Because you've never actually seen them before. So
yeah, so that's right. So for me, I'm very lucky because even if I can't see something now, so like if I was to meet a new person in the street, like I can't really tell what they look like. However, if they tell me I've got, you know, long brown hair and I'm wearing a yellow top and I don't know, whatever else they want to tell me about themselves, like because I did have vision when I was young, I don't get to see what they look like exactly, but I can still have a visual picture in my brain as to what that person might look like. I'm not sure, quite sure how you would do that.
How has your journey as a visually impaired individual influenced your career choices and opportunities? How did it affect your career choices?
When I was young, I always wanted to be a writer. So I had this idea that I wanted to be a journalist. And in the early 1990s, so when I was sort of heading towards later high school, I kind of realized that maybe that wasn't as achievable as, you know, I thought it could be. And look, today you could probably do it quite easily because the technology is available for facilitating that. But back then, I sort of figured, well, how am I going to get from point A to point B? How am I going to see people to interview them? How am I going to do all the research that I need to do? So there was all of these questions that I thought, well, I really don't have the answers to those. And that sounds like it's going to be a very tricky career. So even though I enjoyed, you know, being a writer, it wasn't something that I thought I could actually manage as a career. So then I sort of, you know, contemplated what else I could do. And that's where I came up with that idea of being a social worker, which was based upon that facility of helping people. And I guess I've just continued to do that kind of, you know, helping and caring kind of work through the rest of my career. And, you know, I've circled back around and I'm in the process of writing a book at the moment. So the writing thing's still there. It just took a few years to pop out at the other end.
Okay. You plan to write a book. Have you started?
Yeah, so I'm now doing final edits before I actually send it off to the editor. So essentially it's written, but just some of it's written quite poorly. And so I'm working on fixing it before I send it off.
Okay, when do you think it will be ready?
I would hope by mid-year.
When?
Middle of the year.
Okay. Middle. What? Do you have a title for the book yet?
I don't, actually. That's one of the things that I haven't come up with. So the idea is it's a bit of a story and journey of my high school years. And so, you know, that trauma of being bullied and all the other things that came along when I was a teenager. And I have not yet come up with a final title.
Okay. Maybe when the book is out, we'll invite you again so we talk about it.
Yep, that would be fabulous.
Okay. Well, can you share any personal experience where you have encountered barriers or discrimination due to your disability, maybe recent or while you were growing up?
I think one of the main things more recently would be in terms of employment and career. I've been working in the same, for the same business, I guess, for my government job. I have been working there for maybe 8 years now. And before that, I was working somewhere else and decided that I needed a job change. And so went for the interview. And the feedback came to me afterwards, and this was after I was employed. I realized that, you know, there's obviously things that I need implemented into my workspace to make me able to do the job as everybody else does. So, for example, I've got special software on my computer that reads things out. And so, you know, it's not particularly complicated, but it is something that's different. And so you've got to have a manager or a supervisor that is willing to work with that. And I went to this interview and I thought I'd done really well. And, you know, a few weeks later they said, oh, okay, you've got the job. But what happened behind the scenes meant that I nearly didn't get the job. So I found out later that, you know, the people that interviewed me said, oh, you know, these are the short list of people, but it doesn't include our best candidate. And the manager who was making the final decision said, what do you mean it doesn't include the best candidate? Like, what happened? And they said, oh, well, our best candidate interviewed really, really well, but she has a disability, she's blind. And so we thought maybe that's not going to work so well. And I was very lucky that this manager said, no, that's not the way we do things. And let's work with her, because she wouldn't have come to the interview if she didn't think that she could do the job. So therefore, let's actually make this work. But if it hadn't have been for that lady, I wouldn't have even gotten that job.
I'm Katrina Horn. You're listening to Vivid Vision with Shevo. Keep listening. You're going to learn so much.
And also, if you were scared, they're not going to pick me, I won't be able to do this, you wouldn't have gotten it.
That's right.
Yeah. So most of our limitations are based on our fear, on what we fear, not because we cannot do it. It's because we fear.
Yeah.
And because we fear, don't want to make the move. Like you said earlier, if you don't try, you wouldn't know.
That's right. I think often we are our own worst critics. Yeah. So we are so hard on ourselves and we listen to that little negative voice that keeps on telling us you can't do this and you're not good enough and just stay doing what you know. And it's very easy to listen to that little voice rather than actually going, well, no, hang on. Like, how real is that? And, you know, maybe what I'm hearing myself saying is not actually true.
True. There are so many things we have in mind that we want to do, but we never do them because we are scared of what would the people say? How can I do this? Are you sure I'm going to do this very well? The truth of the matter is, you're not going to do it very well when you are starting, but you just have to start it. In the process of you keep doing it, your consistency, that's where you progress in it, you improve in what you do. So the fear of beginning is really the issue.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So how has this visual impairment impacted your social life, especially your relationship? And when I talk about relationship now, I'm talking about while you were growing up before you got married, because this thing you are going to say will really help a lot of young women who are growing up to become women. How did you handle your relationship with men? Okay, this is a beautiful lady, but she can't see very well. How did you deal with that? How did it affect your social life and relationship?
Look, I think it really did impact. And so at school, I had my best friends. So I had a group of friends. But in terms of, you know, dating and boyfriends, never, never, never at high school. After I left school, I met other people via going to university and things like that. And so, look, that became much easier. And I think as we get older, we're less judgmental in some ways. But still, in my 20s, you know, some people were still quite judgmental. So I've been married twice now. So my first husband, who was the father of my children, I met him when I was 18. And look, to be honest, I probably didn't have really great self-esteem or self-confidence then. We had a friend that introduced us and we thought, oh, we like each other enough. Let's go out on a date. And following on from that, we got married and were together for, you know, quite a while and had children. So I guess that was, you know, an experience of learning across the years while I was married, that I did have the capacity to have a really good social life, and that, you know, I learnt to love myself. And that was, I think, the most important thing. So instead of worrying about everybody else needing to love me, to actually love myself and to be confident. And so then when I got divorced from my first husband, I did go and date other people, and I portrayed myself as being a confident person who was interesting and adventurous and wanted to have lots of fun. And so in some ways, the disability didn't end up being such a huge factor, because I let the rest of who I was be the inspiration for those people to want to spend time with me. And, you know, funny thing, like I met my husband now. We met on Facebook when Facebook was a baby. So now, you know, you don't talk to people on Facebook unless you kind of know who they are. But back in the beginning, you know, that these little apps and things, so you could make friends with people. And we had something in common, and so we sort of started talking about that particular topic, and then we decided that we wanted to sort of you know use a higher character limit. I think they gave you, like, you know, 150 or 200 characters or something back in those days. And so we're like, oh, okay, let's go to instant messenger and have better conversations. And from that, we transferred phone numbers. He was living in Melbourne at the time and I was living in Sydney. And so he needed to come to Sydney for work. And so I said, okay, well, let's meet next time you come to Sydney for work. And we met and we really liked each other. And I guess we've you know, the history has it that I eventually moved to Melbourne, and we've been together for, gosh, about 13 years now, and got married a few years ago. So, you know, the way that I broke the ice with him is I said, well, you know, look, I've got a disability. I can't see. I said, you know, when we go out and meet the first time, I said, you know, you're going to have to hold my hand. And he's like, oh, okay. And so in a funny way, it kind of helped, I don't know, break the ice and stop that, you know, that weird, uncomfortable, what do you do on a first date thing, because we kind of had to take it to the next level while we were holding hands and walking down the street or whatever together, you know, pretty early on. And so You know, there were definitely people that I did that with that I went, well, I don't think I like you. I don't want to date you anymore. But in terms of, you know, my husband, it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it's really beautiful to have that disability and have somebody who cares about you, someone that values you. That's actually what you need. That's actually what, because if you get the opposite, you're going to be broken. You're going to be broken and depressed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, for someone to realize that, you know, your disability is just part of who you are, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's everything about you. So for me, you know, I do many other things. I'm sort of many things as well as being vision impaired. So all of those other things, you know, probably have just as much value and kind of counteract the things that are negative. But I manage my disability in a way that I'm quite proactive and positive about it. And so sometimes I think it's about the attitude, because if you have an attitude of helplessness and hopelessness, and that can be related to any kind of situation that your life presents, then that attitude then makes you not such a nice person for other people to want to spend time around you. And so therefore, you know, maybe you don't have those social connections.
You're right. Okay, how would you advise, like what I asked you? I asked you because there are a lot of young adults, young women who are out there looking for love, looking for somebody to love them. They are, let's say, physically impaired, visually or any other way. But they want somebody to love them. They want the opposite sex to love them. A particular person, a lover. I don't know how to put it. Now, how would you advise such women or men, not just women, men?
I think, you know, what I touched upon before, like, you know, that self-love. So stop comparing yourself to everybody else or what society wants you to be. Just be yourself and be happy with what that is. Because if you spend all of your time trying to be something else, then you're never going to meet anybody that actually likes you authentically for who you are. And so, you know, look, I mean, we're all on our best behaviors. Like, you know, you go out on a date, you dress nicely, you do your hair, you have good manners, you know, you do all the things, yeah? And you don't, you know, slouch around in your dirty clothes and show all your bad habits straight away. But eventually, those things are going to come out, because the more comfortable you get with somebody, the more, you know, of real you they get to see. Now, if the real you and what you present in the beginning are so vastly different, and you've just done something purely to impress somebody else, they get to know the real you. They're not going to like you anymore. And as much as we would like to think, we can't change people. People can only ever change themselves, but we can't ever change people. And so they can't change you. You can't change them. If they don't like you for who you are, you know, that's probably not going to work out so well. So I think it's really about just doing your thing, doing what makes you happy, and being happy in yourself will actually attract other people to want to spend time with you and be with you.
That's right. Fiona, I'm really, really glad we are having this conversation, because people are going through a lot. People are going through a lot. And when you see people post their video in this era of social media, you see people talk down on them. They are not nice with their comments. I'm talking about people that have maybe a different kind of disability, any kind of disability. Mm-hmm. People don't make nice comments. How do you advise these people?
again, I think it's about doing your thing, doing you, doing what makes you happy, and not being worried about what anybody else thinks. And so if you want to post on social media and you're doing something that is, you know, look, I think from a perspective of being the person who gets the nasty comments, I think as long as you're not purposely trying to instigate a controversy, and you're doing something that doesn't harm other people, then what you choose to do is, you know, up to you. And there's always going to be people that like that, and there's people that are going to dislike it. You know, we can't make all of the people happy all of the time. And so at some point you've got to go, well, you know what, that person said something really mean. Is that correct or not? Do I need to take that on board? Okay, well, no, it was just them being nasty and, doing troll behavior. And in that instance, then you just go, okay, well, I can totally disregard that and just keep on doing what I'm doing. Now, it might be that that person may have something valid to say, even though they may be communicated it not in the best way. And in that instance, then it's like, okay, well, consider what they've said and see whether there's any validity in it. From the perspective of the people that are making those comments, I think, you know, just if you don't, that old theory of if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Because again, we bring into our lives what we spend our time doing. So if you're always spending your time commenting on people's behavior and being nasty and judgmental and, you know, spending that time and energy on commenting on people's posts on social media and kind of just causing aggravation, you know, you're bringing that into your own life. If you don't agree with something, you can always just skip past it, look at something that you do like, rather than having to feel that need to go and be mean to somebody.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much. If you don't have, there's this saying, I think, is it Bob Marley or Lucky Dube? He said, if you don't have any nice things to say, just shut up. Just walk past. Yep. Just walk past me. Because those words you say, you see them as little, but this can break somebody down for days.
Mm-hmm.
Then depressed. So my advice for people is, I don't know, sometimes you may not, you just have to overlook those comments, like you said. Sometimes you don't even need to read them.
Yeah.
Or what Absolutely. You do is maybe.
And to delete it even, so you don't have to see it. Like you see it, you go, okay, I'm deleting that now. I don't need to, you know, that's needed.
there is also a feature now that you can limit people from.
And look, I think the other thing is, and this was a hard lesson to learn. I remember when I was quite young and I was maybe having an argument with someone at school or whatever it happened to be. And the piece of advice that I got from my dad was stop arguing. Don't retaliate. Don't say anything back to them. Because I said, eventually, they're going to run out of steam because eventually you can't have an argument with yourself. So stop retaliating, stop commenting back, just let the person have their say. And eventually, you know, if you don't respond, they're not going to have anything else to continue the conversation with.
You know, if you don't look like some people feel like if you don't look like them, you are not human. For example, they have this discrimination against albinos, people that have albinism.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see them as humans because they look differently. So I believe there should be some level of awareness to let people know that these people, they are humans. They did not create themselves. They did not have options while being created. So can you discuss the role of advocacy and awareness in promoting understanding and inclusion for visually impaired individuals.
Yeah, look, I think, and the funny thing I was thinking when you were mentioning it is that is one of the best things about being blind is we don't judge people by the way they look. And so when you are blind, you have to rely on all of the other things that that person gives you. So their personality and, you know, their behaviors rather than what they look like. So in essence, it's actually, you know, a great leveler in some ways, you know, not being able to see and judge. But I think it is, you're right, it's probably human nature in some ways that everyone sort of, you know, has a level of comfort and something that they go, oh, well, if you're like me, then I'll like you. But if you're not like me, I won't like you as much. And that can be about anything. Like, I mean, you might have the same hobby. And so, you know, you meet somebody. A perfect example is you meet somebody, you know, somewhere else, and you say, well, where did you come from? And you say, oh, I came from this place. And they're like, oh, okay, I've been to that place, or I came from that place too. And then you can say, oh, okay, well, now we have something in common. So you suddenly feel connected to that person. But if you don't have something in common, then people are less connected. So I think, you know, to overcome that, I think it really is about just treating everybody as an individual and taking them at face value and, you know, the what they present and what they give you versus putting them in a box and saying, okay, if you look like this, or if you're from this place, or if you believe in this, or whatever it happens to be, any of those ways that we discriminate against people, instead of just thinking of them in that group mentality, actually take the time to look at somebody from a perspective of who are you as an individual and how do I relate to you, rather than relate to the stereotype of what I think that you're going to be like.
So how do we keep this awareness to a large number of people? How can they be aware? How can we educate them to love these people as they are?
Yeah, I think it comes back to that whole thing again, just, you know, that concept of being kind and being empathetic and being understanding and not just using your own situation to judge what other people are like or how they should be. Actually thinking about, okay, well, do I know really about this person? And if I don't, maybe I need to go and learn, because then I can make a judgment from knowledge and awareness rather than just, you know, this misconception and manifested idea of what I think it might be like.
Okay, this being visually impaired, is there any way they can be helped medically?
For me personally, no.
Or do we just rely on some kind of miracle?
I guess at the moment the technology is not there. So what's wrong with me is actually quite rare, and it has to do with the cells on your retina, which are the light controlling cells that you know, send the messages from what you see into, sort of, you know, turn it into the information that needs to go to your brain. So it's physically my eyes aren't able to see the things that they need to see to convert it into messages. And so those cells are slowly dying off. And look, there probably is some, maybe, you know, tricky stem cell research kind of idea or something that they might be able to do sometime to, you know, regrow or refix those cells that no longer work. But at the moment, that technology is just not there. And, you know, the other thing is people ask me, you know, if that magical cure was to come along, or a miracle were happen, and you know, the fairy comes and waves the magic wand or whatever it happens to be, and say, let's fix this. I'm not even sure whether I would entirely fix it. Look, I mean, in some ways, it'd make my life very easy. But in some ways, it would also make my life very difficult, because I have all adapted and built my personality around the fact that I have vision loss. And so I think that if it were magically fixed, it would change who I was. And I don't know whether that's a good thing.
All right. Thank you very much. It's been a wonderful time with you, Fiona. I've learned a lot, and I believe our listeners are learning too. So I want to know. Yeah, I want to know, do you have any coaching? How can people reach you? Do you have any program for them? How can they reach you?
Yeah, so I'm on all the social media. So if you look up my name, you will find me. And I also have a website as well. So you can always, you know, drop me an email or a DM or something from the social media. And, you know, always really keen to meet new people and hear different perspectives. And especially with the social media, like I love people that ask questions and get me to, you know, how do you do this or how do you do that? And so then that gives me ideas that I can go and, you know, do another education piece on something that, you know, maybe I do every day without thinking how I do it. But in fact, I've actually adapted it to be able to do it without sight. And, you know, it's a bit of an education for people to realise, oh, okay, well, that's how you do it if you are blind. So always keen to connect with people. And, yeah, like my name is actually quite uncommon. So if you just look up my name, you'll find me everywhere.
Okay, tell us the website, the social media handles, the name.
Yep. So my name is Fiona Demark. So like Denmark, but missing the N. So Demark. And my website is fionademark.com.au. And, you know, the same thing on the social media. So Fiona Demark or Blind Inspiration.
All right. Great. Do you have any proof can attend a school? Or they just need to reach out to you if they want to talk?
Yeah, if they just reach out, we can chat. I do run workshops and things from time to time. As I mentioned before, I do individual coaching. So it just sort of depends on what people are looking for. You know, sometimes it's just, you know, great for them to follow me on the social media and just, you know, pick up those tried to sort of, you know, post quite regularly with little tips and tricks and tools and things to, you know, I guess those little snippets of inspiration or, you know, ways of thinking differently for the day. And so, yeah, like there's lots of different ways that I disperse information.
All right. Fiona, quickly before we go, I want you to say a final word first to people going through some kind of disabilities who are scared, who are afraid to try things out. What do you have to say to them?
I think just give it a go. Don't listen to all the people that tell you you can't. Just get out there, give it a go, do what's right for you, and don't feel guilty about the things that you can't do. Because, I mean, we are, you know, faced with some restrictions in life, but on the other hand, we've got lots of great things about us as well. So focus on all the good stuff instead of focusing on all the bad stuff.
Okay, what do you have to say to people who look down on people with disability who have nasty things to say about them?
Take the time to go and learn, and, you know, in a gentle, respectful way, ask the person, hey, can you tell me a little bit about what's going on for you? Or is there some way that I can help you? And if you're genuinely interested and respectful in the way that you ask, you will learn so much information and you will be probably blown away by that person's story, because we are so easily, you know, judging people. And I think, you know, it's when you take away that big picture and actually just look at a person and their own situation, you'd be amazed at what that person's story is and how their life is.
Great. And above all, we should love people. Love is the greatest, because if you love them, you wouldn't say some nasty things about them. You always want to make sure they are okay. Thank you very much, Fiona Demark. It's been a wonderful time with you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we hope to have you when your book is finally out.
Yes, hopefully I will get the editing finished soon.
All right, that is the end of today's podcast. My name is Shevo Umeni, and I've been talking with Fiona Demark. Keep listening to Vivid Vision podcast. From me and Fiona, we say bye. Fiona, thank you very much.
Thank
you.
All right, great.
Thank you so much for remaining with us to the end of today's episode on Vivid Vision podcast. We had a wonderful guest today. Such an educative conversation. I hope you grabbed something from it. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd like you to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Share Visions. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Share Visions. Please like, share, comment, rate our podcast. That is very, very important to us. Rate our podcast on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify and also leave a comment on our episode. If you have something to say to us, you can send a voice note through our WhatsApp at +234 7039694929, and your comments will be added to the next episode. If you would also like to be a part of the show, just let us know in the comments. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time. We see you again next time. Bye.
Thank you for joining us today on the Vivid Vision podcast. Make sure to visit our website at sharevisions.com. You can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and everywhere else podcasts are streamed, so you will never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found a value in this show, we would appreciate a rating on Apple Podcasts, or if you simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/sharevisions. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at sharevisions. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. Until next time, keep learning and keep growing. Share Visions. Inspired, share the vision.